We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, this past week, there were some days and some events that I never thought would see happen. Hang in there because Brian and I are going to try and talk through everything that's going on. We'll let you know the information that we have and we'll share it with you for the rest of this episode here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Football will be back. We thought it would be back now. Sure. It's not. Is it back in the spring? We don't know. Is it back next year? Again, we don't know. But at some point, it will be back.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. There's no easy way to put it. The fall sports schedule has been canceled. That is what we know. So much of what we don't know in regards to information, what things look like moving into the fall, what the schedule will be like for the guys on the team, for everybody on the campus in regards to fall sports. That has yet to be determined because this just happened this past week. But Brian and I are going to do our best job to let this one kind of free flow. We don't have a guest today. We're going to let things settle down a little bit, and hopefully in the coming weeks we'll be able to speak with Coach Harbaugh, Ward Manuel, and everybody else involved with Michigan Athletics. But for right now, it's Mr. Bush and myself. Mr. Bush, how are you processing the fact that on Tuesday at about 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, football season was canceled?
Like you said, when would we have ever even considered this? Obviously, if you are a player, you have to consider it because there are injuries. There's an end of the line for everything, but the game is supposed to continue. Your team might be out of it, but the game is supposed to continue. And obviously, as Kevin Warren said, safety, well-being, health of the student-athlete is what's most important. But that does not take away from how hollow, how empty of a feeling it is. If you are a football fan, if you are a football player, if you are a football coach or administrator, this is unprecedented in a year that's already been unfathomable.
It is. And I mean, gosh, there's so much that we need to get into. And as I mentioned, we'll keep the In the Trenches coming. We're going to keep Conquering Heroes. And again, make sure that you go to MGO Blue Podcasts with John Jansen and find both of those. We're going to keep them going and try and answer as many questions as we possibly can. But, you know, I think the one question that I have that everybody is asking or they're wondering is from the schedule release last Wednesday, which gave us some optimism. Kevin Warren made no question or and left the door open that, hey, this doesn't guarantee that we're going to have football season. We all understood that. But what changed so quickly from Wednesday to the rumors that started to swirl on Saturday? We didn't hear anything Monday. And then Tuesday, they came with the press conference that said, hey, this is over. I just don't know what that information is. And I'm asking those questions, trying to find out so that I have the answer. We can share the answer with everybody else. And I'm disappointed that we don't have that answer.
Yeah, I mean, when you think back to March, right, there was a tangible reason that started the pause on sports. Mm-hmm. Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz tested positive for COVID-19. And you think back to March and all of the uncertainty, it was understandable to pause because we just didn't know. And I think it's important for the Big Ten. While you could, and listen, if they truly believe that this is the best decision, who are we to say, well, that's not right. We want football. They have as much information as anybody. But I do feel that it is incumbent upon the Big Ten, the Pac-12, any entity that has medical professionals, doctors, experts working on this stuff, trying to help us get through this pandemic. If there was something significant medically that they unearthed between the schedule release and now, I think it's incumbent upon all of them to inform the public because we just don't know. That's not a criticism of the decision, even though it hurts that there won't be college football and there won't be all the fall sports. But I do believe that at some point, sooner rather than later, it is incumbent upon the Big Ten to say, here's why. This is what we found that told us, as Kevin Warren said, it's day to day. Well, what happened on the day where they couldn't get to the next one?
Right, because we have heard nothing through every news source, and every news source right now is different. You don't know who to listen to, sure, who to trust, and everybody interprets it differently. We see that right now from the Power Five conferences, two different conferences. They may be in different parts of the country, but we're all still dealing with the same pandemic, and they're interpreting medical information differently. I understand that. And, you know, who are we to say, you know, we're not doctors. You mentioned that. But I will have an opinion, sure, about that. And I'm wondering if, I'm left to wonder. And the reason I'm left to wonder, or the reason I'm concerned the further we go down the road without any answers, is I learned this when I was playing, and I've said this a couple of times before, not necessarily here on in the trenches, but what I learned as a player was when you are asked a question, you can answer it however you want, but you got to give something. If you say no comment, that is, hey, there's something there that somebody wants to know. If you continue to dodge that question, then there's a point A and a point B. And in between that, there's a narrative. And whoever is writing the story, whoever is talking about this, is left to their own devices to gather information that may be correct, maybe not correct. And they're going to put their own spin on it, on the story. This is an opportunity for the Big Ten to write the story and give us the information so that we can then understand or try to understand. We may never understand. I mean, none of us understand why this is going on. We understand the science. We understand, you know, what is happening, but we don't understand really why this is happening to us in a philosophical sense. But unless we get some information, we're going to start writing our own narrative. And I encourage the Big Ten, and I hope that they do give us some information, write your own story, so that we can have some direction.
And I correct me if I'm wrong, because I did not play college sports. I didn't play college sports. But I think it is fair for the players, for the coaches to say, okay, for this stretch, we, you know, you as a conference, the NCAA as a whole, provided guidelines. for the programs that continue to follow those guidelines, it's just kind of an abrupt ending. And I think that as a player, as a coach, as somebody who puts so much into what they do, they were owed and still are owed a full explanation and parameters for how we go forward. I understand. Right now, it's difficult to know exactly how we're going to go forward. We'll talk about some of the spring ideas and how we look ahead here in a little bit. But the players who for months were finding creative ways to work out at their homes or around Ann Arbor with Schembechler Hall closed, and then they get to campus and they are being very diligent about things. Jim Harbaugh said it in his letter just before the official announcement of the cancellation of fall sports. Look at the data. We've done well. I think the big frustration we've seen in Major League Baseball some too, there's an understanding of the dangers of the virus. There's a respect for that, but there aren't the clear indications of, okay, if this, then this. There's not a whole lot of if-thans that student-athletes, that programs have to work off. And yeah, I get it's a delicate time, but if you make such a definite decision, to me, the student-athletes are owed that and an understanding of if these conditions are met with the coronavirus and with your way to avoid it and implement it, then this happens at a certain date.
Yeah, and you know, you just hope that there is information that they're basing this on, and that it's based on science and not fear or, you know, fear of, you know, litigation. And I understand that this is a business. You know, these are public universities. You've got to, you know, you've got to make decisions that are in the public interest for everybody that's going to be on campus. I understand that. But the information, I do think these are, other than Northwestern in the Big Ten, these are all public universities. These are all funded by taxpayer dollars, by and obviously tuition and fees. But I think the general public, I feel like I'm owed that information. So we'll continue to move on and see where it goes, see what we hear from the Big Ten, because again, this just happened on Tuesday. We're talking now on Thursday, and there's obviously time between now and when they get things going in January. And hopefully things are going in January. Hopefully things are better than they are now, for whatever numbers or information they're using.
So with all that being said, if you were a player, say you were a captain like you were twice in your Michigan career, what now? Like, how do you try to figure out this unprecedented situation? I mean, there is no roadmap. There is no how-to type of a document for this. So now that you've had a couple days to digest the decision, in the interim of not having a whole lot of guidance, what do you think these players, especially these leaders, should be focused on?
Is allowing guys to process this information, how they're going to process it. Brian, you're going to process it differently than I am. And because I have different experiences, you have different experiences. We have different things that maybe are goals or aspirations. And that's where you get into these team dynamics where some guys are playing football because they want to make it to the NFL. And this is going to create a lot of uncertainty. Some guys are playing and they know the NFL isn't in their future. It's not realistic. They're playing because they just want to run down the tunnel again. They want to play in front of 111,000 people. Everybody is playing because they have an opportunity to get a great education. That's still going to be there. Classes are going to continue. That's going on. So when you put all of that together, the guys that are here for the education, the guys that are here for, you know, certain reasons, they're going to look at it and say, you know what, at least I still can get, I can go to school, I can go to class, I can do all those things, we can work out, and eventually we'll have football. Other guys are going to say, how will this affect my draft status? What if we don't play in the spring? What if the NFL doesn't move the combine? And we've heard some rumblings that they may be open to moving the combine to June, which I think would be great. There's some ideas out there, and ideas have floated around. You and I have talked about ideas of what spring football might look like. And if that happens, it would, I think, clearly be done sometime early to mid-May. Combine, draft, and then, you know, the 2021 season, what that looks like. So I'm getting this. It's a long way around to get to. As a leader on the team, you have to understand, just like everybody processes a loss differently, this is a loss, but on a grander scale. So everybody's going to process it differently. At some point, you need to, sometimes, you know, it's a pat on the back. Sometimes those guys need a hug. Sometimes they need to be talked to. Sometimes you need to spend a day or two, because this is emotional, and you're going to need to spend a lot of time with some of your teammates, because that's your family. But at some point, when everybody goes through the grieving process, and you then have to be able to find out what's the rules for being in Schembechler Hall? What are the rules for working out? Because football will be back. We thought it would be back now. Sure. It's not. Is it back in the spring? We don't know. Is it back next year? Again, we don't know. But at some point, it will be back. These guys need to make sure they stay in shape. They take care of things. I think the other thing that the leaders on this team, as well as coaches, staff, administration, need to understand, that this game is played by passionate guys. And this game means so much, and playing the game of football, that there are going to be some guys that lash out. And there may be some people that think, hey, since Tuesday, at times I have. It's all a part of the process. It doesn't excuse anything, but it may explain why some guys either post on social media, why some guys are, you know, saying the things that they're saying. And we've seen it around the Big Ten in terms of the coaches. It's an emotional time for those guys. We've heard different things from Scott Frost, Ryan Day, James Franklin, Jim Harbaugh. They're going to process this differently. And I'm going to give you a scenario, Brian. If you're Jim Harbaugh or any head coach in the country, you recruit these kids, and then at some point you have to stand in front of them and tell them that their season isn't going to happen. And I don't want to say that this is any different than Juwan Howard standing in front of his guys when the Big Ten tournament was canceled, or telling them that, hey, the NCAA tournament was canceled. The caveat to this is that this is an entire season, but this is very similar to the spring teams that did not get to play a full season. They had just gotten started. Some of them hadn't even started yet. But when you stand up there and you look down at your team, or you look at your team, however you're looking at them, you see not just those faces staring back at you, but in their faces, you see the first time that you walked into their home to recruit them, meeting their parents, getting to know them, their first practice, their first time, all of those things you remember. And for the seniors, because being a senior at Michigan is a really big deal, we have always played for our seniors. You see some guys that came in and excelled right away as freshmen and had great, great careers. Other guys came in and struggled. But they found a way to keep on moving forward. Some guys might have gotten in trouble, but they all made it to this senior class with different paths, and they all have their individual stories. And so when a coach looks at them and has to tell them that, it's not just telling people what's going on. It's seeing the lives of these kids be forever changed. So when you hear from Jim Harbaugh and statements after this decision, you hear from Scott Frost, you hear from Ryan Day, James Franklin, you're hearing the passion that they have and the caring that they have and wanting to stand with and by their players.
I mean, you think about the game of football, right? If you play in college. You started 50 games at Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 50 days you got to wear the winged helmet, majority of them at the big house. But you think about how many days you've lived in your life. The number 50 in the context of college football is a massive number. But in the context of John Jansen as a human being, 50 days is not that much. There are so few opportunities. And you think about how football compares to other sports. In a college setting, a basketball player gets 30 to 40, depending on how far they go. A baseball player or a softball player could get 50, 60 plus, depending on how things go. Within that context of football, you think about the seniors, and you think about, in particular, the seniors who maybe haven't played as much, and this was their opportunity, this was their chance. And it goes back to what I've had to think about when we've tried to get through this crazy time. Two things can be true at once. Number one, you can count your blessings compared to what other people have had to endure during this, right? Six-digit deaths in the United States, 5 million cases, frontline workers having to battle. You can recognize that losing college football for a year compared to that is not the same. But also, in the vacuum that is John Jansen, that is Brian Bush, that is Jim Harbaugh, that is any one of those young men who were supposed to wear the winged helmet, in that context, in that vacuum, there's an importance to this that transcends most things in their lives because of all the work you put in. Forget just these 5 months. If you're playing college football at a high level, you've been focusing on it for probably your entire life. And when that's stripped away in a way that, you know, let's face it, Michigan and a lot of teams in college football were doing it the right way. They were doing things based on the science, based on the medical experts. But when it's taken away, that's a raw feeling. That is it stings. And I hurt so bad for every student athlete. I hurt so badly because, I mean, this is supposed to be the time. You work out in January and February as a football player thinking about now, thinking about finally getting into camp and getting ready for that first game. And yeah, there are things that are worse going on in the world, but for a lot of people, this resonates more than most.
Well, it does. And then in what stings even more is you look around college football, and I think this whole pandemic has highlighted so many things that need improvement in the world of the NCAA, in the world of college football, especially at the Power Five level, because that's where we reside. And that is, two of the Power Five conferences have stated that they're not playing, and that's the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. Right now, the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 still have hope. And will they play a college season? We don't know. I think there's still a good chance that they do. But what does that mean, especially when you are at one conference and one school? That's not, but you've got friends, you've got people that you know at other schools, and they are. That is, again, going to keep compounding the issues that we're all seeing. And that because there is no uniformity, I think that is one thing that we're looking at over the course of the past 5 months. And we've talked about it. I've talked about it in a lot of different forms and over a lot of different shows that needs to be addressed. And it was highlighted in regards to the protocol and testing for preparing for a football season. You know, what schools we're going to be doing what, and if we play them, what are we looking at on the field in regards to, we know Jim Harbaugh had said, hey, we can put a team out there that's tested negative. Do we know that on the other side? And again, that just comes to the uniformity of the Power Five. And you can throw the Group of Five in that mix if you want, but it just shows right now the disparity of you know, where things are and how decisions could be made, but they're not being made.
So you mentioned that you think there is a pretty good chance that we will see some sort of college football this fall. So in the couple of days since the Big Ten and then shortly thereafter the Pac-12 made the announcement, we've seen a Big 12 schedule, the SEC and the ACC, which by most reporting seems to be those are the two that are really trying to push forward. What are you watching for, and what potential hurdles are there for these leagues that, let's face it, if the Big 12, ACC and SEC get to the season, there's going to be that question of what are you doing that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 felt you couldn't? How do you break all this down? Because I do think there's a chance. I'm skeptical. I don't think it's going to happen because of that context. I think eventually, if two power leagues are saying no, I think there's just going to be so many questions to get those other three across, certainly the finish line. Maybe they get it started. But what has stood out to you since the announcement elsewhere in college football?
Really the same thing that we've seen across the country. I would think we're looking at the same data and that we are looking at the same numbers. We're looking at all of the same science, the interpretation of that science. And it starts with, do we wear masks? Don't we wear masks? That has been a huge issue in this country. Everybody can look at the science and completely interpret it in different ways. You can look at the science in numbers and in testing. And you know what? There's some doctors down at Duke in the ACC that are advising them. And that's, I think, one of the things too is you look at the Pac-12 and their medical board is all independent individuals. They're not associated with any one university. And you look down, I think it is the SEC and maybe even the ACC, their medical board is made up of individuals that are involved in some way, shape, or form with the conference or with a university. And my question then is, do they understand better because they see on a day-to-day basis the protocol that Jim Harbaugh explained and that they're going through? And quite honestly, if you can find a way to put players out there that have tested negative, again, I don't have a problem with this. I think another question that has been raised when you watched the schedule announcement for the Big Ten last Wednesday, Kevin Warren offered the fact that his son plays down in the SEC and that he would be comfortable with him playing under these circumstances. Now, I understand that's a different part of the country and obviously a different conference, but the numbers, if anything, in terms of the community, are worse in some of those states. What changed for Kevin Warren that they're going to call off? And I know that's not Kevin Warren. I know it's the presidents, but that the Big Ten isn't playing, but the SEC, where his son is playing, and will he continue to support him in playing? Not that he can make him not play because he's sure. Over the age of 18 and God gave him and America gave him the right to make a choice. So I think that is going to be something that is looked at very hard and not fair for either guy, not fair at all. But this is how we're trying to figure out Why are things different in three of the Power Five conferences than they are in the other two?
Yeah, and I think, you know, a big talking point for people is, well, once students come back on campus, there are just going to be outbreaks. And, you know, I think in all of this, my feeling on it is that we can't oversimplify. If you have, listen, random Joe Schmo, who's a sophomore at, you know, State University Tech, right? Like, yes, we're all in college. When you're in college, you're not at the peak of your intelligence spectrum, right? But for student athletes who they have to shoo away pressures of, you know, dietary pressures and habit pressures and trading work for fun pressures to be a student athlete at college level. I don't love the concept of, well, why even bother? Because once the student body comes back, it's all going to go to hell. I mean, maybe I can't prove you wrong by saying that, but why are we making that sort of judgment in a way that's almost condescending to people who it's like, oh, well, students show up in 2 weeks. You guys will all have coronavirus, you know, in a month. Like, for a college athlete, you already have to be disciplined. If you had a university and an athletic program that followed the protocols, I'm with you. I have no problem with seeing how it goes. You need to be willing and able to pull the plug. You can't sit there on Thursday and go, boy, we got a big game on Fox this weekend. Maybe we have too many tests. No, you need to have established parameters. But the thing I didn't, that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, was just assuming that it's all going to dissipate once the student body comes in.
Right. And you know, you're talking about a lot of different motivations in that as well. And I guess the follow-up question is, if that's the assumption, how was it safe to have the student body back? If the student athletes who are in, and it's been established, Jim Harbaugh has said, and we've heard from Ward Manuel, that in regards to contact tracing, in regards to tests, they have not, nobody on the athletic campus has tested positive, or they haven't proven that it has come from the athletic facility.
Yep.
So when you have that type of environment where it's safe, it's as virus-free of an environment in this world as you're probably going to find, save some medical communities. When you don't feel like you can make it happen in that, because athletes have a great motivation. Football players and all fall sports, if they know what's at stake, and student athletes are used to making those sacrifices mm-hmm. from a very young age. It is part of what they do. Part of that sacrifice this year was going to be not going to parties, not socializing with your friends, because what was at stake was your season, your team, your other goals that you have, and you knew that you had to do things right to even have a shot at that. So there's, again, there's just a lot of unknown right now as we continue to talk through and walk through this process.
So with that being said, let's talk a little bit about the concept of spring football. Listen, for the last 3-4 months, people have thrown out ideas. In recent days, this has become obviously more and more of a possibility, of a talking point. Jeff Brohm, the head coach of Purdue, came out with something that's pretty interesting. He has a plan for training camp to begin with kind of a 2-week buildup in mid to late January, then 4 weeks of training camp. Season would go from late February to mid-May, featuring an 8-game regular season with no bye, a 4 or a 6-team playoff, or if the other three power conferences do get through their season, then maybe you just play a Rose Bowl between the Big Ten and the Pac-12 champion. And then you have next season's training camp begin early September, season to start early October, 10 games, 1 bye week, postseason, a little bit pushed back, but for the most part, the same as what you would normally assume around New Year's Day. This is a head football coach at a Big Ten school. Your thoughts on that and just the concept as a whole?
I don't have any problem with playing 2 football seasons in 1 calendar year. And I know I may be in the minority in that. I just think back to my time as a student athlete, and even my first couple of years in the NFL. Would I want to play 2 NFL seasons in 1 year? No. But, you know, for 18 to 22 year olds, one of the best qualities that a young person has is their ability to heal and recover. We would end usually around January 1st, 1 season. We would start our winter conditioning in a matter of a couple of weeks, And that would take us through to spring ball. We would have 15 practices, play a spring game sometime in mid-April, and then proceed through our off-season conditioning until we started fall camp. If you want to try and get in 6 to 8 games in the spring, and you start those games in March, you know, say the first weekend of March, and you go to the end of April, maybe you play a bowl game or a national championship. And I will say this, I know that we're all trying to think outside the box. Until the contract is up, we're not going to have more than 4 teams in a college football playoff. Sure. So I know that there's a plan A and a plan B. I do believe it will be a 4 teams if we get to that point. Then you have your off season. You have, you know, I do think you have to modify it and push the 2021 season back a little bit. Start camp end of August, beginning of September, and start your games in October. And you can have limited bye weeks, still get in a full schedule and play in, you know, a championship game in mid-December, and then play a bowl games, national championship games, all that stuff, you know, as normal. The whole goal for a college football team under normal circumstances is to play 15 games. We've seen Alabama do that on a regular basis. We've seen Clemson do that on a regular basis. So I don't necessarily know that if you go 8 games in the spring, 10 games in the fall, and that's 18 games with 3 months in between or 4 months in between, 18 is not that much more than 15. And we're talking about a group of kids that want to play football. The wild card is going to be how many of those kids that this was going to be their last time playing and they are NFL talent. Do they want to play a college football season and an NFL season? That's going to be the question. So I think it's doable. And the shortest hurdle to me is the 2 seasons in 1 calendar year. Now it comes down to scheduling, because if everything ramps up in January, you've got basketball, you've got, you know, football, sure, you've got so much going on campus. And we all know in Ann Arbor, the big house is right next to Chrysler. It becomes a little bit of a scheduling issue. Now, hey, football, you only play once a week. Basketball, you can move those things around a little bit. It can be done. There's just a lot that goes into trying to make this happen. And then it's about player safety as well. And that's just going out on the field in March in Ann Arbor. You don't know what the weather is going to be. You could have a 40-degree day that's absolutely beautiful, and it would be great to play football on that day. You could also have a day that is, you know, sub-freezing. It's snowy. It's icy. And what are the field conditions like? And is it safe to put athletes on that field simply because you have to, or that's when the game is scheduled? I would play. I do believe that football was supposed to be played in cold weather and in the mud. We won't have the mud, but we could have cold weather. So again, it just comes down to, there are a lot of hurdles. Can they all be overcome? I believe so. I think the motivation is definitely there to make that happen. Now it just comes down to, will we have buy-in, and will we get buy-in from the players, and how many players will opt out because of, you know, it could still be COVID at that time. We don't know what's going to change between now and January. Could be nothing. Then are we still making decisions based on what information? That's kind of what it all comes back to.
A couple things on that. Number one, if any sport can absorb a subsection of their, you know, star players not coming back, it's college football. New stars are born every year. You know, if you are a player and you are not projected to be a first or a second round pick, then I think you are motivated to return. Now, if you want to opt out due to COVID reasons, we've talked about that. You should have every right to do that. That's fine. But if we're talking just solely as a football conversation here, if every first and second round projected pick, so call it, you know, if you're safely in the second round, there's probably 50 guys in that range the advisory board would give. Say if all 50 of those players say, I'm sitting out, that is, you know, probably five or six from the Alabama and the Clemsons of the world, and then you sprinkle in a few here and there, ultimately, that's not the end of the world. College football breeds new stars every single year. There are plenty of guys, you think of Michigan in particular, you know, Cam McGrone, not a lot of people knew his name this time last year in Ann Arbor, let alone nationally. Josh Uche, similar type of a situation. The other aspect of it in terms of, you know, playing 18 versus 15, and I'm curious, a lot of people have discussed with those spring practices, that would be, it'd be much tapered back in the Jeff Brohm plan. And a lot of the plans we've heard of a really a winter season, early spring season. How much of the totality of the hits and the contact that a player takes during the course of a calendar year, a normal calendar year, come in spring practice? If you do take away padded practices to an extent, does that make it up to where, okay, 18 over the course of 9 months is similar to 14, 15 over the course of 4 months with spring ball thrown in there as well?
You can do that, but at this age, that's more of a program that is for guys that are masters of their craft. You know, NFL players that have been playing 5, 6, 7 years, and they have done this, they could do it in their sleep. The problem that I have is that where you develop your depth, where you develop your talent, where you develop into those, you know, if you're talking about NFL teams and NFL talent, is through practice. And you can work on X's and O's and walkthroughs. You can thud up and not have as much contact and work on some things. But where you get really good at football is playing football. And I think that there's going to be a gap in the development of our football players. Can it be made up? Yes, but it's going to take some time. And in terms of health, maybe this is the way that we have to go. But I know that my skill development as an offensive lineman, somebody that that changed positions, going from a tight end to tackle, if I didn't get an opportunity to hit and be physical throughout spring football, and when I say hit, full speed drills, and then as well through training camp, as much as I did, my development would have been stunted a lot.
So one other aspect, you talk about the weather and the potential issues there. So something that Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated reported on Thursday, he said NFL teams are willing to help college football happen in NFL stadiums if it were to get to that point. It's something that Breer reports it has been discussed, and within the Big Ten footprint, there have been conversations in terms of, okay, well, where could they play? And Breer mentioned, obviously, Ford Field in Detroit. You've got the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. You have Indianapolis, of course, with Lucas Oil Stadium. Minneapolis has an amazing facility. St. Louis, they had the XFL there this past spring. Thoughts on that? And in terms of, again, if you want to try, it wouldn't be at the Big House. It wouldn't be at Kinnick. It wouldn't be at Camp Randall. And that takes a little bit away from it. But it might help to alleviate those issues to say, okay, we're going to put you indoors so that, you know, it's not three ice bowls of the four games you play at Michigan Stadium.
Mm-hmm. And that's all doable. But we also have to realize there's a financial component to that. You know, you have to travel those teams down there. You have to put them up in a hotel. You've got to feed them on the road. There's a lot of things, and we're looking at tremendous shortfalls in the athletic budget. I do believe that that would be a possibility, and it may be the way that they have to do it to make it happen. And if they do, I have no problem with that. I'm fine with that. Whatever we got to do to play football, that's fine. And I think if you ask the football players, hey, you know, we were going to play all of our home games your senior year, you're going to lose that opportunity, you seniors, to run out of the Big House tunnel one more time, but you're going to get a chance to play. They would probably most likely say, I'm all in. And that's, you know, that I think that would be a good option.
Well, this, let's face it, this sucks. I mean, this is not ideal for anyone involved. And our plans over the coming weeks and months will be to continue to give you the type of Michigan football and the and Michigan athletics content that you've come to expect. Obviously, it's going to sound different. It's going to be different. I will say some point next week, we're going to try to do some sort of fan Q&A to, as these decisions start to, you know, get further along within other conferences and how things are affected. We can talk a little bit about potential recruiting in future episodes if this comes into a play. But get us your questions at JohnJansen77. You can email MichiganWolverinesRadio@gmail.com. And then you can text us as well, 734-328-1760. I'll also say this. There's going to be a lot of change in college sports. Without football, I mean, we're not breaking any news here by saying this is going to really, really affect Michigan, all their Big Ten programs in the Pac-12, and potentially down the road, the other three leagues. It will even if they do play football. If you love the show and if you appreciate the show, we'd love to have you like, subscribe, review. We're going to continue to churn out content. We are not expecting to slow down, but certainly having people show that they really do appreciate what we're doing and what we're continuing to churn out during this crazy time, we encourage you. We could use it right now for sure because, well, let's face it. I mean, we've all heard the reports of what no football means for a financial situation for a school, and our jobs is to try to help bridge that gap a little bit. So if you are able and if you are willing, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, comment, subscribe. It helps us and it also gives us ideas because this is unique. This is different. This is episode 140 of In the Trenches, but 141 through, we're not sure. It's going to be a little different.
It will be. And we'll get back to talking to the student athletes. Yep. We'll get back to talking to the coaches. Hopefully we'll have Ward Manuel on here soon and we can hear from him and see what, get maybe a peek at what the future looks like. But we're also going to continue a lot of the stories that we have had here on In the Trenches, as well as Conquering Heroes. Recently, we've had the 1980 Big Ten Championship, Rose Bowl Championship team with John Wengler, Bubba Paris, Andy Canavino. We'll still dig into that. This is the 40-year anniversary of that, as well as so much great history and tradition here at the University of Michigan. No shortage of individuals that we'll get a chance to talk to, that we'll get a chance to tell their story and bring up some memories that maybe you have forgotten or don't remember, or maybe you weren't even born yet. There's a lot of great stuff that we have coming here. So stay tuned as we continue to move through the unknown to whatever end, and we will give you the information as we get it. We'll give you as much honest information and opinions as we can provide here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. M Go Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.